I worked in a free clinic for a lot of burners who go to Burning Man. And so they would, it would be, their bodies would need months to heal after, after going to Burning Man. Instead of if they prepared their body with supplements, with nutrition, with hydration, if they prepared their bodies could actually be open to psychedelic experiences and or just open to, some people are going to Burning Man without psychedelics, without other illicit substances. And just being in the desert in that heat is just so hard on the body.
Yeah.
Is what that is.
Hello and welcome to Self Talk. I'm Rachel Astarte. Today, it is my great pleasure to have my first guest on Self Talk, because usually it's just me self-talking. And today I have my dear friend and naturopathic doctor who specializes in hormonal wellness, particularly neuroendocrine care. And she's also a psychedelic integration therapist, Dr. Erin Rae Biller. Welcome to Self Talk.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks for having me. This has been a great evolution in our friendship.
Yeah.
Considering we met many, many moons ago.
Yes.
And we're coming full circle is what I would say.
Yeah, I would say so too. And it's that's what makes this such a treat for me, because we've known each other, my goodness, we met 13 years ago, almost 14 years ago.
Almost 14 years ago in 2007.
Yeah.
After I'd finished a program and did a little bit of traveling and listened to my soul. And then I went back to what is, I think, a former home of mine, and hopefully maybe a home of mine in the future in some capacity. We met there in Udaipur in that beautiful hotel.
And yeah, in India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember, I'm just going to tell the story of the first day that I met you, the first night I met you. So
yeah,
we were in a group of volunteers in Udaipur, India. I was working as a volunteer doing a documentary for an NGO. I was writing the script and that kind of thing. And you arrived a couple of days after I did. So I had this beautiful hotel room to myself. And late at night, about 10 o'clock, this young woman comes bounding in, you know, with your bag. And if I recall, please correct me, my memory isn't always the best, but you had just happened to be in Dharamsala and just happened to be there when the Dalai Lama was speaking, when His Holiness just was popping by and you got to sit and listen to His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and meet him. And that's how I met you. It's just like, oh yeah, I just was hanging out with HHDL, you know. and we fell madly in love.
You got that right. Yeah, we got that right. I was in Bodh Gaya, so I was underneath the Bodhi tree where the Buddha found had this moment.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I had one of those universal. I had a lot of those moments where closing your eyes and breathing and connecting with the breath. I had what I would experience is, for lack of a better word, you know, nirvana, where I just was at peace. I was at one with myself. I was at one with the earth. And absolutely, my roommate from college and I just happened to, we went into this temple and I said, hey, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is coming tomorrow. We'd love to invite you. And I thought there was going to be like 300 or 400 people or 1,000 people. I mean, there are 1,000 people around and nope. It's a very small audience where all these people waiting outside and they saw that we had a ticket. And so I was, you know, waving the ticket there. I'd be like, oh, come with us. It was a very small little intimate audience. And it was pretty powerful. They were returning the tooth from the Buddha. There, I believe the Buddha's tooth was being kept safe in Sri Lanka. And so they were returning the tooth from the Sri Lankan temple to the Sri Lankan temple in Bodh Gaya.
It wasn't Dharamsala's Bodh Gaya. Okay, got it.
Yeah, it was Bodh Gaya. Yeah. So yeah, you got that right. One of those, I just wore that necklace that I got, my mala beads that I got during that ceremony. I just wore them for my birthday, actually.
Oh yeah. Wow. Yeah. And happy birthday, belated to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that was the first moment I met you. I got that story downloaded and I was like, wow. And then we were just like buddies after that. That was it. We were inseparable. And except when we went to work for our separate NGOs. So, so tell me, from there, you said, you know, you got this calling to do what you needed to do. How did you get into being a naturopathic doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. So my mom always tells the story that when I was 3 years old, I told my parents that I wanted to be a doctor. And then a few weeks later, I came home and someone took me to McDonald's and I'd never been there before. So I told my dad, I was like, I'm going to work at McDonald's. My dad was, you know, heartbroken. I went from wanting to be a doctor to working at McDonald's, but that didn't last very long, actually. And so my other best friend, she lives in New York and New Jersey, Christy Lazar, can talk about how whenever we played pretend from kind of 3 and a half until I left New York at about 10, I never really wanted to. We were making witch potions out in our little treehouse, or I wanted to play doctor. And I would deliver babies of any type of animal. And I really wanted to always like take care of them and do all of those things. And I grew up in a house that had a lot of medical doctors in it. And so long story short, I always wanted real medical equipment. And so someone would give me a plastic one and be like, oh, no. So they'd collect medical equipment from all of my family. And I really nurtured that and wanted to be a doctor until I was in high school. And I, you know, thought, oh, I looked at all the statistics of how hard medical schools were to get into. And I, you know, I suppressed that voice inside. I made what was, you know, what I thought was the more rational, more paper definite, more paper choice is what I would say. And I went to college and I had my dream job in college, my junior year of school. And my senior year, I had another really great dream job. I worked in professional athletics and I also had an advertising internship and a PR internship. And then I had loved the Foundation for Sustainable Development. So while I finished college early, I lied to my mom and dad, in particular my dad, and I was like, I have to go to India in order to work again with this NGO, the Foundation for Sustainable Development. So I went to India, studied sustainable development, traveled all over Rajasthan. And just a few months prior to that, I had been in a car accident and I was really feeling like my body wasn't necessarily living in a way that it was in alignment with myself. And that little voice from being younger was kind of coming up again and saying, you know, it's great that you have all of these dream jobs and things like that, but where you saw yourself when you were younger working in the medical profession and working in that healing space might be a better calling for you. And so I actually ended up going to a doctor that helped me to walk again after my car accident. And I literally had one of those magic white light, you know, light coming in from outdoors, like an incredible, profound moment. I was like, I think this is actually what I want to do.
Wow.
And it was hard for me to tell my friends and my employer and my dad that I didn't actually want that quote unquote dream job, that I wanted to go back and to be in medicine. And so everything really lined up when I was in India, because we were working in these health camps and doing basic health examinations, and I could speak enough Hindi to really help the doctors. And I love that hands-on approach. And so after my program at the Foundation for Sustainable Development finished, I was finished with college. So I had an extra 6 months to live, to travel, to do whatever I wanted to do. And I loved Udaipur so much.
Yeah.
And I loved my host family so much that I thought to myself, you know, I should maybe stay here. And then I asked them, like, oh my heavens, the program coordinator, Namrata, she had three friends that were working in women's health. And it was like this perfect alignment of, do I want to stay here? And I said, yes, absolutely. This is a great way for me to double check. Do I want to work in women's health? Do I want to work in the healthcare profession? Do I want to be a doctor? Do I want to be a nurse? Do I want to be a PA? And it was, for me, it was just a perfect moment. Again, I had that synergy of, I loved what I did. I worked in women's reproductive health for Marie Stoops.
Right.
Organization. And I was able to really double check and figure out that, yeah, I did want to be in healthcare. I absolutely wanted to be a doctor. And I wanted to work in a space where I could work one-on-one in really patient-centered medicine. And so came back to India, spent a lot of time there, did a whole bunch of traveling, came back in 2008, started post-bac pre-med, then went to naturopathic medical school. At the Baxter University, I was like, I could never go to Baxter University because it's in Washington and I don't like the weather. That's not for me. And they opened up a location in San Diego. So again, just another synergistic moment.
Yeah, really.
I was part of the inaugural class, which was no easy feat. There's my renegade sort of nature always coming out there. I chose to go to school at a new school. And now I graduated in 2016. And now in 2020, they invited me to be on their board of trustees. So again, another huge full circle moment. And I do. I practice as a licensed naturopathic doctor in California and in Arizona. And then I work via telemedicine and telehealth kind of globally. I see patients all over where I do medical education rather than direct treatment.
Okay. So medical education, what does that look like?
Medical education looks like it depends on what it is that I'm talking to a patient about. So if I'm talking to a patient about their basic healthcare, I prescribe to them, not prescribe, I instead of writing a prescription, I give them recommendations. So I say, this is for medical education only. Please talk to your licensed primary care provider about the following.
Okay.
So I treat a lot of individuals who live in New York City, who live in Florida, who live in Ohio is another interesting place, in Tennessee, mm-hmm. where there aren't naturopathic doctors who are able to work the same way that I'm able to work with them. And so I give them recommendations. I'll say, I would recommend the following lifestyle and behavior changes, or I recommend the following supplements. And I give them the research that I have and know based on dose, route, frequency, and say, hey, please talk to your licensed primary care provider about creating, using this and creating a healthcare plan of what that is.
Okay.
Some people listen and follow up with their primary healthcare provider. A lot of individuals choose to just take that medical education and use it for themselves. Instead of just going to a supplement store and listening to, you know, the person who's working in the supplement aisle, they get an actual understanding of what dose, route, and frequency looks like, and the research really behind that is what I would say.
Yeah.
And then in a different space for psychedelic integration therapy, that is really medical education, because these are controlled substances,
mm-hmm.
Except in Oregon now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I will be getting a license as a naturopathic doctor in Oregon, so I can hopefully work more one-on-one with patients. And so
yeah,
what
so
I do is...
I want to really get into that because that's such a new... I mean, it's not new. It's been around since the 50s and 60s, but now it's getting a resurgence. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about psychedelic-assisted therapies.
Yeah, absolutely. Psychedelic-assisted therapy or psychedelic integration therapy... It really started for me in my own friend population. I saw a lot of individuals. I went to school in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I have seen a lot of individuals who work in tech and who work in big tech or in health tech. And a lot of them were having unhealthy lifestyles, is what I would say. So working all the time, drinking a lot of coffee, drinking a lot of alcohol to unwind at the end of the day, self-medicating in both ways, as in starting with something that is waking you up and ending with something that's kind of down-regulating your body in that way. And I just witnessed in a lot of my friends and acquaintances, they, instead of were talking to me about, I'm tired, I'm burnt out, I'm fatigued, I'm overwhelmed, I don't like my job, I want to get out. Like, I just want to like, everyone was like, I want to get a van, I want to get a Sprinter van, and I just want to like live out of my van and connect with the earth. Mm. I witnessed all of these individuals. They were telling me, you know, they were using low dose psychedelics, in particular, either psilocybin or psychedelic mushrooms or LSD, more predominantly psychedelic mushrooms. And they were using it. Their partners were using it. Their entire companies were using it. They were quitting coffee. They were being more productive at work. They were being more creative. They were finding more joy in their job. They were really making these huge changes in their lives that were much more beneficial. A lot of them still got the vans, but they were figuring out, you know, how to enjoy the van on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and going to work Monday really recharged and ready and showing up for themselves and showing up for their family. So that's kind of what piqued my interest in this is what I would say. And so that was probably when I was in naturopathic medical school, about like 2012, 2013, 2014, just somewhere in between there, definitely before I graduated. And I just didn't know how feasible it was to build a practice. In that way. And then I have been working with an integrative doctor here, and we have been talking about it. And I started experimenting myself and started working with a few clients who were asking me for it. And then I knew there was really something there when my average client who was asking me for it was either 60 years old or above, or a stay-at-home mom. And the stay-at-home moms were saying, you know, I have been told I should go on antidepressants, or I'm on antidepressants and I'd like to get off of them. Or I feel like my lack of sexual interest is caused by the antidepressants that I am using. And I really do want to make a change. I want to be ready for menopause. I want my hormones to be on board. I want to be ready for this and experiencing this in a way that will help serve me. That was the moment, and that was probably 2 years ago, where I was like, this is here to stay and this is really moving. Mm-hmm. And then I got involved with some naturopathic doctors up in Oregon who worked on the initiative. So there were two huge initiatives that really happened in November. One is really decriminalizing possession of small amounts of, you know, what were considered scheduled substances. And the other one that's really huge is being able to use psychedelics in a therapeutic setting with a licensed provider is what that is.
Right.
So that's the next level. What I'm doing now is I'm helping educate people on what is the safest way to use psychedelics, how to use them in a safer environment, and how to prepare your body for something like that.
Mm.
Meaning, not a good idea to be on an antidepressant and then decide that you want to go do ayahuasca, psychedelic mushrooms, and LSD. We really worry about the interactions that can happen with
that. Yeah, absolutely.
Serotonin sickness, there can be all of these other kind of known occurrences that can happen. So for me, I want to move beyond that medical education that I do. And again, still primarily now that medical education, people up in Silicon Valley, they have it dialed in. I wish they would come see me so that I can kind of help check in with them is what I would say, and make sure they aren't just taking these things and not working with a therapist or working with some type of integration specialist.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We're doing, yeah. Yeah. That we're working with, you know, someone like you.
That's a really important point that I just want to pause for a second, because, and then I'm going to ask you some more specific questions about it, but it's so important. Yeah. There's the experience and the expansion, right, and the awareness that comes in, the right gift, as I call it, the gift.
Yeah.
But then you have to process that gift,
right,
and integrate it into your day-to-day life, or else you've wasted the gift. Right.
Right. Right. So, and it's more than just, even for me, and this is why I love being a naturopathic doctor, it's more than working with someone in a therapeutic arrangement. For me, it's also looking at things like vitamin D that's highly tied to someone's mental health status. It's looking at their diet and figuring out, you know, are they eating our reductionistic, sad, you know, diet that we call, you know, the standard American diet that's highly mm-hmm. processed, that's high in sugar, that right isn't going to give them the nutrients and cofactors that they need in order to make those neurotransmitters, in order to feel, in order to be able to even feel things, because you've fed the body the nutrients that it needs, is what mm-hmm. I would say.
Right.
And so it can also be, you know, what is their omega oil status? What is their cholesterol? You know, what is their blood pressure? There are other things that even go beyond that, taking the gift and living the gift. It mm-hmm. also is like, how do you set the foundation in the body to actually yes. make those things move forward?
Absolutely. Because if you're it's like throwing it in the garbage can if you're not taking care of the body. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. And I saw that in, I worked in a free clinic for a lot of burners who go to Burning Man. And so their bodies would need months to heal after going to Burning Man, instead of if they prepared their body with supplements, with nutrition, with hydration, if they prepared their bodies could actually be open to psychedelic experiences and or just open to, some people are going to Burning Man without psychedelics, without other illicit substances. And just being in the desert and that heat is just so hard on the body.
Yeah.
Is what that is. So it's all about foundation and preparation, and then also taking care of yourself kind of afterwards is what I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course we could talk about this forever because it's such a great, but what I'm getting from what you're saying is how important it is to just prepare the body as well as having the right dosage. And that, I guess, was the next question I had. You know, I know a little bit about it, but it's not something that you pop every day, a pill every day or a capsule every day. There's a set regimen, right? And a certain amount depending on the person. Isn't that?
Yeah, it is. It does depend on the person. And I'd say in the beginning, people came to me wanting more of that. They wanted to know how to safely, where to find or how to safely use. And I want to keep my medical license. So I don't really tell people where to find these things, but I tell them how to safely look at something is what I would say on that one. When preparing the body for ayahuasca, for peyote, for acid or LSD, or for psychedelic mushrooms, it was really more of that larger dose is what I would say. It was that someone wanted to go and have either a guided or supported psychedelic trip or experience.
Yes, right.
Now I would say the bulk of my practice and the bulk of my education is actually using low dose therapy. I use the word low dose because microdose isn't necessarily the same realm that I understand. A microdose is LSD, in my opinion, where you're using micrograms of something. So you're using a microgram dose of something. Low dose is something like psychedelic mushrooms, where you're still taking about, on average, patients take about 100 milligrams for a couple, for a few days, for 5 days on and then 2 days off is what that is. That's on average is what I would say. And things are going to change because there's now these big tech companies, there's these psychedelic pharmaceutical companies, there are some in Canada, there are some in Amsterdam, in Holland, where these things are legal to use. And that's probably going to change. Access will actually look like getting a medication is kind of some of the mindset on that. Good, bad, and I mean, various people want that. Other people don't really want that. But good, bad, or indifferent, we will be able to get a standardized dose is what I would say. And that's where I am. My hat comes on as a clinician is figuring out what is the standardized dose and how do you give that standardized dose safely to individuals. Yeah.
Beautiful.
And so in general, I would say it's usually that 100 milligrams of psychedelic mushrooms, 5 days on, 2 days off. Some people prefer to do 4 days on, 3 days off. There are people who are using LSD. I see usually people taking 5 to 10 micrograms is kind of on average what I see. And similar thing on that one. You know, they do 5 days on, 2 days off, or they do 3 days on and 4 days off. It's just, you know, they're not doing it all the time.
Right.
And people come back and they report amazing things. You know, I worked with a woman to help her safely reduce her psychotropic medication. I worked in unison with her psychiatrist. Her psychiatrist knew what she was doing, as did her psychotherapist, everyone, all three of us. So she's this team of integrative healthcare providers, which is the ideal situation. So
absolutely,
the psychiatrist understands this is what she's doing. The goal is for her, at first, she's going to do low dose therapy with psychedelic mushrooms. And then her end goal is to eventually use ayahuasca. That's her end goal. But we have to get her there because we want to wash the medications out of her for quite a bit of time, about 8 weeks of time.
Right.
So everyone's on board. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing that happened is she was coming off of the medication. She reported to me, she said, you know, I'm starting to feel things. I watched a movie and I cried. There was something sad happened in the movie and I cried. And I was like, that is amazing. You are feeling, you are going back to feeling things that you were not able to feel before.
Wow.
And so she got off of all of the psychotropic medication and she started after that. She took a little bit of a break. She took some supplements. She took some B vitamins. She took some vitamin D. We helped fix her thyroid. We gave her some omega oils. We gave her, you know, nutrients. She did a nutrition evaluation. We gave her nutrients that she was lacking in. She was lacking in zinc. She was lacking in copper. So, you know, she's on this whole plan. And so after that, she's feeling really good. She's ready to do the low dose psychedelic mushrooms. She does the low dose psychedelic mushrooms and she's like, I see the sky now. She was like, you know, I'm seeing things that I didn't really like. I can see the trees. Like I can see the birds and the trees. I can hear the animals around me. Like my senses are being reawoken is what that is.
Wow.
And so her next, she's washed off of that. She's 2 week wash of that. And then hopefully in the new year, she's going to have this ayahuasca experience. And I look forward to hearing that on from her. And she has, you know, she has significant trauma from her childhood and she's ready to address that significant trauma from her childhood to really move forward is what I would say on that capacity.
Yeah. And that's such an important aspect of it too. When people are dealing with trauma, to have that support team, you know, it is extremely helpful and in fact necessary before you can sort of go this alone, which a lot of people do, unfortunately. And they just don't have, I mean, some of my patients will have experiences doing ayahuasca and no one there to help them process it and integrate it. And it can do damage psychologically, you know?
Yeah, it can. Yeah. And it can mimic psychosis, you know, it can mimic psychosis and it can exert mind control and it can become also something that is difficult to acknowledge where you actually are in time and space. because you've had this amazing experience, you've had this amazing gift, and then all of a sudden being back here in reality is just so very difficult.
Absolutely, what I see.
And that's where people really do need psychotherapy. They need psychotherapy support.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, that support really helps people kind of integrate and move forward, is what I would say.
Yeah. I think that you've got it spot on. I mean, there has to be that team that has to mind, body, spirit, you know?
Yeah. And also the foundations again, which is, you know, like I remind people, you know, if you're drinking 3 cups of coffee a day, I'm not really into you taking a low dose psychedelic mushroom when you're taking 3 cups of coffee a day. If you're not moving your bowels regularly, if you're not moving and experiencing nature, and you're just going to sit down at a desk in front of a blue light computer, that's not the ideal arrangement. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've had patients who have chosen still to do these things when they've followed my plan in any way. And overwhelmingly not, you know, they come back and like, you know what, Dr. Biller, you were right. That probably wasn't something that I did. I didn't have a good experience, but I learned from that not so great experience, which is why I'm holding a lot of space for psychedelic use in experimental psychological treatment and in individuals, is that even when they have the bad, you know, the bad experience, they still learn something from that not pleasurable experience, is what I would say.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what human beings do. We learn by trying things, and it doesn't always work the way that we think, but that doesn't mean that, that it's wrong, because everything is a learning experience. Yeah. So just to shift gears a little bit, and maybe not, maybe this comes back into the psychedelics, but the show, this podcast is called Self Talk. And so obviously I deal a lot with talking about the self. And so I'm curious, maybe this is a strange question, but what does the self mean to you? When we talk about the self, what is the self when you think about it, either clinically or personally, whichever way you want to answer that question?
Yeah, that's a great question, is what I would say. I think for me, the self is integrating who I actually am and integrating my earthly self with my higher self. You know, my higher self knows she needs to drink water. She needs to move her body. She needs to express herself and share her emotions with individuals. She needs to create situations that work well for her. She needs to nourish herself before she nourishes others. My physical self, though, you know, I create these boundaries and I create these physical shields where I'm not coming from my highest self. And when I'm not integrating that part, I struggle. I don't do the things that I know I should do when I'm, you know, dealing with my earthly self, is what I would say. So the self for me is really usually it's that place where it's not only the higher self of knowing, it's where I'm actually doing things that work well for my entire well-being, is what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And how are you doing with that right now?
Yeah. So I have definitely been better. I am taking 10 days off from the office and from my various practices and my various jobs, because I wear many different hats. And what my higher self knows is that while this is a blessing that I can take this time off, my higher self is wanting to be able to take time like this in the future because I want to, not because I need to do, like, I need to do something like this so that I am not a worry or a bother, or, you know, I'm not taking out my frustrations, thoughts, feelings, and all of my on myself or on my patients, is what I would say on that. The end of the year is really big. You know, the end of the year is really big for me, and it's big for providers, because you can kind of acknowledge, you know, where your patients were in the beginning of the year and where they are now. And the amount of stress, emotional stress, financial stress, physical stress that I've seen in my patients this year, especially with this pandemic, has been very stressful, is what I will say.
Yeah, thank you for that. In fact, let's talk very briefly about this pandemic, and it would be, I think, remiss of me not to talk to a naturopathic doctor about the pandemic. Jump in anywhere. What are some tips or advice or things that you've seen during this pandemic in terms of wellness?
Yeah, for wellness, you know, the best things that I really did see, I have a lot of international patients who are associated with the military or their spouses in the FBI or in the CIA, and they're stationed in different places all across the world. Mm-hmm. And they dealt with the pandemic earlier than we dealt with the pandemic. And they instilled in me this idea of getting a cohort. So finding a cohort of people, if you have family nearby, that's great. But also, you know, finding a cohort and creating a cohort and creating boundaries and communication around, you know, this is what we're doing. These are our behaviors. These are our thoughts. This is how we're taking care of ourselves. And this is how we can have community so that kids can still play together. And, you know, I have people that I know I can go walking with, and I have, you know, individuals who I can, you know, do outdoor yoga with and things like that, so that I still have a sense of community. Mm-hmm. Because I really did. I learned this from Dr. Lori Mishley, who does Parkinson's research. One of the number one ways that they saw a decline and an increase in Parkinson's symptoms and the decline in functioning in Parkinson's patients was the more lonely they felt, the worse they were. And so, which we know to be true, you know, Cinella's research has been published. They have great papers. It was presented at AIHM, all of these things. So the lack of community and the loneliness that I saw in some of my patients who hadn't left the house, you know, saw them in March, hadn't left the house until June or May or something like that, was something that I found to be devastating. So I'm really educating individuals on getting a cohort, sticking to your cohort, creating healthy boundaries and communication there, because community is so important.
Yeah.
That's and then it's all about the foundations. Yeah. So it's all about the foundations for me. So food, that's not what happened when everyone freaked out and panicked. Toilet paper, you know, rational amounts of toilet paper is, you know, everyone should actually have a month's supply of toilet paper in their house. And if they don't, I can get you to resources that will help you if you can't afford a month's supply of toilet paper. But it looks like shopping around the outside of the store, you know, the entire outside of the store, all the fresh foods were still available. All of the packaged products, those were all consumed when people were worried and stocking up. So eating really healthy foods, getting out and getting sunlight when you can, making sure you're moving your body is really, really, really important. And if you can, and you have access to working with a provider, doing things like checking your vitamin D levels, because if you need to supplement vitamin D, that might be something for you to look into. And checking your B vitamin levels, that's also something that if you need to supplement that, that's something you need to look into. Because our bodies, we have our innate immunity, we have our adaptive immunity, and we have nutrition that helps our bodies to actually process and create and have cellular barriers. All of these things kind of are something that we need to take a look at, is what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. I love the cohort idea. Why didn't we think of that earlier? But that's so, so brilliant. And yes, of course, in keeping your body healthy, that's a big part of it too. Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Also, you know, if someone does get sick, there are ways that have now been researched that might be, you know, better ways to take care of your body than not. Maybe not the smartest thing is to go home and to just drink a bunch of Gatorade and to not move your body. You know, there are lifelong old naturopathic hydrotherapy techniques that are used. There's the wet sheet treatment. There are socks that will, the cold sock treatment, you know, that will help with fevers. There are herbs that can be used when you have that can kind of help mitigate some of the signs and symptoms that are associated with this pandemic, but also can just provide you a little bit of relief beyond taking DayQuil or NyQuil or things like that, is what I would say. And, you know, great things, you know, melatonin, there's all sorts of immune support that we you know, tried and true. We have research on it. About tapping into it and using that instead of necessarily, you know, I have a patient who got COVID and didn't leave the bed for 5 days. I was like, you know, he didn't know what else to do. And I was like, you didn't think about taking a shower maybe to help? And he's like, you know, no one gave me anything. They gave me a piece of paper that looked similar to the flu and said, take Tylenol and rest in bed. And I did that. And I'm like, well, you can also shower and you can also, you know, eat chicken soup or vegan mushroom soup. And, you know, it's okay to take a few supplements as well. You know, that's the time to call your licensed naturopathic doctor. That's the time to call your integrative healthcare provider.
Yeah. Beautiful. And I think that's really, really helpful advice and very practical advice too. So thank you for that. I want to thank you for being here, but first I would love for you to share with the listeners how they might be able to get in touch with you. Is there anything that you would like to share with us so that we know how to find you?
Yeah. So I have a few practices is what I would say. I'm here in California. at Nature and Science Medicine. I'm also, which is a clinic that I work in, I see patients on one-on-one. I do a lot of procedures there as well. And then I basically see patients all over through my telehealth practice. Most of my psychedelic integration and private practice has really come via word of mouth. My new website should be up and going by the new year, though. It's just drerindiller.com. It's a great way to connect with me, and always through email and Instagram, which is drbiller.nd. That's where you can find me as well.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Dr. Erin Rae Biller, for my friend and naturopathic doctor. I'm so glad that you were able to sit with me today. And thank you for all the beautiful advice that you gave us.
No, absolutely. I am. You know, it was medical education is what we'll say on that one. No prescriptions or anything like that. I do really always like to remind individuals to really talk to a licensed healthcare provider.
Yeah.
And to find ways to get that education. And then it's just easier to live it yourself. Oftentimes what I see in my practice is mom comes in, mom makes all of these changes. The kids live the same changes as well. And then afterwards, all of a sudden the dad is living the changes, or kids come in and then the kids make some changes and it feeds back to the mom, feeds back to the other mom, or it feeds back to the dad. You know, it just doesn't, it's really all about finding and living the message yourself and living the medicine is what I would say.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Bye, Rachel.
And
thank you. This is great to be on your podcast. I loved it.
Thanks for being here.